Mr. Cheeseman, Reel 35. You wanted to bring in some memories that you'd forgotten last time.
That's correct, yes. You see, I finished up preparation for the first battle of Al-Alamein. Well, my goodness, that's, I think, about 8 months. And in that 8 months, let's start again. When we went back to Beni Yusuf for the second time to get re-equipped with the Lee Grant American tank, and my episode with the indirect sights and what have you, what I left out was the fact that shortly after that, I went back into hospital, same hospital as the other one, with a second dose of malaria. Now, we were all aware of the fact that the medics during the war did experiment on us, and thank goodness they did. I mean, their advanced medical science and leaps and bounds during the war, it's one of the good things about war. And my medication there was a number of pills. That was at 3, 4 hours, at 5, which you had to take and keep down for a certain length of time so your system could absorb the chemical into your system. But keeping it down was the problem. I remember them sort of, well, they didn't have a stopwatch as such, but I've always said they put a stopwatch on you. You take it, and if you can keep it down for half an hour, you've absorbed the medication. If you only keep them down for 10 minutes, you've only, that's only a third of the medication, so you get another lot, and so on like that, and you can imagine bringing them, you know. But anyway, I was discharged, straight back to my battalion, as fit. But on reflection, I think I was still suffering for some of the after effects or what have you, because it was quick due, because I try as I might, I can have no recollection of going back up the desert again. I was obviously put on a transport. By the way, no convalescent camp, no transit camp, nothing like that, straight on transport up the desert.
Did they tell you what was in the medication that you were taking?
No. That was, of course, quite normal in those days. They wouldn't tell you, I suppose, not those placebos going around. Anyway, and my first recollection is, of course, of joining the battalion, which it was the east side of the Libyan Egyptian border. Now, from then, I've been reading Kenneth Maxey's book there, The History of the Royal Armour Corps, and from his dates, which I think is a little bit not quite correct. Oh, and if I may just digress here at the moment, dates in history books, I don't think many of them are absolutely correct. The facts are probably okay. For instance, when VE Day came, I was on half-day holiday down in Brussels at the time, and you can imagine when the news came, everybody was kissing and hugging everybody, what have you. Then Churchill decreed that VE Day would be the following day, so we're celebrating, not the correct VE Day. That's the point. So I don't altogether go with some of his dates, he's got there, because Rommel started his advance from El Agheila, and that's after he'd been pushed back there on Operation Crusader, and which our battalion only did the Sitwazig battle and went back. When he started away in January. Now, subsequently, when we got back to the desert, we didn't go just up to Gazala. We went beyond Gazala. These things do come into my mind. So I question whether actually he qualifies this from January to February. Now, you know, I'll put it like that. So because I can't remember logically this happened after that happened, that after that, for these next few months, I think it's what, three or four months, it's a long period. All I can sort of rely on is telling you the salient things that do stick in my mind. Whether they happened in this order or not, I don't know. Actually, when I get back to chronological order, it is the Gazala battles, actually. But between then and that, I did an awful lot of cross-desert navigating. I was Lance Corcoran, by the way, by being given a 500-weight truck to go back to the workshops and what have you of the what's the Remy? I'm not sure whether the Remy was established, but RAOC or Remy. And I remember two distinct efforts. Going down to the, I'd been given map references and I was navigating the Missing Compass Grade when I came across a wire, waist height, you know, from horizon to horizon. Now, there was no warning sign swinging on the way, either in Danger Mines or Acton Minen. But nevertheless, it's a wire, and therefore it's a minefield, and you've got to take in that. So I said, oh, well, okay, I must navigate around this. So I was running along the outside of the minefield. When went over one horizon, when there was a British lorry coming towards me on the other side of this so-called minefield. What do we do? Who's right? Well, you can't ignore that. Now, we fitters have been trained in mine clearance and what have you, and we had a business for that purpose. So what we decided to do would we probed for mines for a reasonable area where two lorries could pass each other. And so what happened, that would make sure there was nothing like that. The lorry took my tracks, I took his tracks. And sure, I don't know what happened there, but sure enough, we came and the wire stopped. I think it had been a spoof put up by either the Rommel or ourselves just to create that sort of thing. You can't ignore it. Now, that was one thing. Now, the other thing was, it was on that same do. Because of that, I got there rather late in the, well, in not middle evening, it was still night. So we'd stay overnight. First light next morning, we had visitors on the horizon. Jerry. Now, there was three tanks down there, which were in working order, and they'd just come off the battlefield for something looking there. And so they had a reasonable amount of ammunition and things like that. The snag was that two of them, that one of them didn't have a crew, the other two did have a crew. Well, I had one stripe on the overall sleeve from the Blackberry, and so the commander of the workshop decided that you are going to be tank commander. And I was given, a welder and a turner and something else to make up a crew. Because I know they didn't have a great deal of knowledge of how to load up a gun. And I was dashing around inside that flaming tank, loading up this, loading up that. And all we decided, I got into the hold-down position so that my 37mm was sticking over the top, and I got a few shots off on board. I think the clerk or someone got somewhat to do with him, and that was that. With the 75, with direct sights, just firing into the sand because it was low down on the tank. So I decided I'd try mortars, so I put it up as high as possible, so as to to reduce my range, as it were, and hope it would come in that direction. So We got off all the tank, you understand, wasn't absolutely filled with ammunition. It was probably, I don't know, probably half its complement. But we got every round off. And we frightened Jerry. I rather think we were just there to make the numbers. Well, I know we were there to make the numbers up. The other two tanks, they manoeuvred and what have you. And you can imagine that with our normal diet of bullion biscuit predominantly, that you were constipated constantly on the desert. Well, being a tank commander cures that, I can tell you. Those were the things.
Do you know whereabouts the depot was?
I haven't a clue. I'll try to remember. It would be in the direction of Tobruk from where we were. It wasn't in the Tobruk, of course. It was very near Tobruk. The other thing that sticks in my mind, because it was then that I began once again to get frightened, and that old feeling came up. Up till then, this particular time in the desert, I sort of passed out as a first class desert rat. I'd learned how to make ovens and cook and all that business. I'd learned how to practically apply my desert navigation. I knew how to conserve water and all this sort of thing. I had, as I said, become and we were going along, and I can always remember that it was west. I don't know what gives that, but we were going westward, so we were going into the enemy. And we were converging onto the desert was slowly going up to an escarpment, and we were converging onto the edge of the escarpment. And there was four vehicles. I think we were going up to relieve our own air shop. You know, I'd be surprised. I'm pretty sure that's what it would be. Anyway, we were converging on this escarpment, and of course we were getting towards the skyline, so the column stopped. And the officer at the front of the top, front of the column, got out and did the Indian scout, you know, crawled up to the, and put his head in the building, I guess. And his reaction said, hello, there's something over there. Everybody stopped, and he told us to crawl up. With. By this time, hadn't been issued, picked them up off the, we got rifles and goodness knows what, and Breton guns and things like that. So we crawled up, and there was three half tracks merrily going along, pretty well parallel. We would have converged, and we were told not to fire unless we were fired upon. Keep hidden, told not to fire. That is, I don't know why that, but I suppose they didn't. We weren't there to fight, we were there to get stuff up to our chaps. The other occasion was that later on in that day, we hadn't come up with the time, later on that day, we got a visitor, an aerial visitor. It was this German plane. I don't know what sort, but I could see, it was that low, you could see the the black cross, what have you, come slowly along the top, probably not more than 100 feet above us, and we did panic. And the only way the show of panic was that we got our rifles out and we started firing up the way we'd been taught it to Brook, last year, firing one spot, hoping he'd run into it, and of course he did run into it. We brought him down. The bullets, I don't know what happened to the air, it crashed, of course, it didn't catch on fire, but we got him through the leg, and he could speak English quite well, and he was most annoyed to find that we were British and not German. And if we left him alone, that's it. Those are the three things which I say, I can't put them in order, and I can't say, it's verging on stories which may have built up in my head. It's not that at all. I can't put them in order, but it does prove that we, our mind at the time was operating west of Gazela at that time. Now the other thing, which also stretches out, and this is the last effort, in that period there, I did get a dose of malaria, because of that I do remember. They took me on a stretcher to the first CCS closest. Where, I don't know.
Is this the third dose?
This is my third dose, yes. Which I think was the second dose, which had, I'd not had the laid down medication for as laid down there, and they'd experiment on me. They'd probably they'd subdued the symptoms. But I know, I do remember that the first CCS that I went at, I don't know how they would know this unless they, well, they couldn't possibly know it, because I was rambling on, I can't remember this. But I did sort of come round the following day, as it were, and they were doing a sternum puncture to get mallow test, the blood test, which established it with malaria. We can't deal with you here, you have to go back. I went further back to the next CCS, and I felt a lot better. And they said, no, fair enough. Oh, by the way, I was on the normal medication for things like that.
You weren't taking these tablets?
No, it was just back on quinine. And I don't know, it has to be in Egypt, probably around Sidi Barani, I think. There was a tented hospital, and I walked into that hospital, and they kept me there about 3 or 4 days and sent me back up to my battalion. Now, having said that, we can now pick up where we left off on the last year.
We finished with Knightsbridge. You came out to Tobruk, and then you picked up this officer with the Valentine tank, and you're in retreat now.
That's right.
What are your memories of the retreat from Tobruk?
Yes. Well, I think I mentioned this the last time. That officer of the Valentine tank saved the crew and myself.
Yes, you mentioned this, yeah.
It was few miles of the desert, south of Bardia, when the Bowie disintegrated. Well, it didn't disintegrate, it shed its rubber tire. And I knew, we'd had this before in France, I knew, hello, it and sure enough, within yards rather than miles, that Bowie just disintegrated. No spares, nothing we could do. We decided not to set fire at the tank because. Obviously take the crew on board, which made us rather crowded, something like that. My driver decided to go in the back, and I drove, and I think it was the major, was the passenger as well. And we had to get a move on. We did not know how near Jerry was behind us. We caught up with our rear guard east of the Libyan and Egyptian border. A huge barbed wire entanglement was there. You know. And I would say by about halfway, this is well in the desert, of course, but about halfway between Sidi Barani and Mersma Tru, we caught up with my own battalion, sheer luck, of course, and the technical officer was delighted. He got back a very valuable workshop, through my amateur, as it were. Anyway, something, of course, of what was happening in Mesmer too. If I'd been in the Revelation through, I don't know exactly what was happening, and that was where. What was his name that he's VC?
Wakenshaw.
Wakenshaw, but he's VC. There was some tremendous action going on, but to me, that was unknown to me at all. And we got to the El Alamein, which, of course, at the time, I didn't know, it was just another part of the desert.
This will be several days' journey. So how
again, you see, my memory, the effects of malaria, I know you've put it out there, it had to be several days' journey, yet it seemed to me as if it was all, it obviously wasn't, but in one day. But I remember sort of saying, okay, this is where we are, and we've stopped running. Now we sort of turned round and started our training, you know.
How far back into the Delta were you? Or behind the Alamein line, as it come to be known?
Yes. My battalion then, whether we were attached to the 22nd Armoured Brigade or the 4th, I'm not sure. But anyway, my battalion was with the force that organised defences on the Alam Halfa Ridge. And I do remember we did days and quite a number of days practicing, i.e. that here we are, we're all set up, everything's hold down, as it were, anyway. And when we see the enemy, we run towards him, and then we retreat. And this was, and we actually had pegs out in the desert, so as to give our gunners the exact range and what to do it. Now then, this occurred for, I say, days to me. And the reason I say this is because going up one night, practicing, all minefields were opened. Now, at that time, did I mention, if I can just cut this in, did I mention about windscreens reflecting the sun further back?
Might have done, I.
And what we did was we smeared it with grease and slung it, I think I did, slung it with sand so that it was just like, opaque, it couldn't reflect. And then a square piece cleaned out of the sand so we looked through. The lorry was like that. I was in charge of the lorry, and coming to the minefield, my new driver, all my crew was young, was a bit scared. I said, okay, I'll do it, lad. And fit his wagon all at the back so that we could pick up the stragglers and the breakdowns. And I was driving. Now, you'll appreciate the fact that I've only got 5 inches by about 2 inches at night in a minefield. It was no good at all like that, and you couldn't clean the windscreen. No way. I mean, it'd take hours to clean it. So I opened the driver's
door
to the driver's side, and these were sort of not forward control vehicles. They had a bonnet, but not like the old-fashioned, and the mudguard was there, and I was driving with my head out. My hands on the front mudguard to support my body, with my feet on the controls, and one hand, the left hand, stretched out, driving the wheels, and I was keeping track with the lorry in front. Never moved off at all. So how come did I run over a mine? I think it was a ratchet mine. I.e. that, you know, the first vehicle goes over, nothing happened, second, and so on. Three, and it's set for six. When the sixth wheel goes over, woof, because it wasn't my front wheel, it was my back wheel. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here now. I cannot remember hearing the bang. But by jingles, I could feel the blast. The door was open. And incidentally, the lorry suddenly started going up the hills because the back axle had been blown clean off, of course. And I was, you know, sitting back like that. And I remember, I said, oh, my ignition light's on because the engine is stuck. I better switch the engine off to save the battery. I better knock it out of gear. Oh, and I better put the handbrake on, which just came straight back at me. This, of course, is because I was stunned. Then I suddenly thought, I've got to get out of here. Now, the rifle in the rack on the right-hand side had fallen forward. Now, everything is in silhouette against the night of no moon, against the night of the skyline. And that across, that rifle across was, you couldn't say it was a rifle, it was, to me, a bit of the cab which had come across and I'm locked in here. Then I heard trickle, trickle, trickle. My petrol tank's leaking. Then I said, hey, get out of here, lad. If it catches fire, I'm a goner. So I got up to get out and I've got no legs, none. And I cannot tell you the feeling I had when I've got no legs. I put my hands down on my sides, I could feel. Yes. Now I could feel my thighs in my hands, but I couldn't feel my hands on my thighs, as it were. And I felt down, and they were there. Felt right down the front, yes, everything. Put my hands up, by the way, I was in shorts and horse tops and footies. I put my hand down the back, and I felt steel. I'm bleeding to death. For goodness sake, get tourniquets on. Get tourniquets on. And this was in my mind when the rest of the crew came round and hauled me out to the side. Now, there again, in a minefield, nothing had been done. I didn't think of this at the time, but they just pulled me to one side. And I passed out. And I woke up in a CCS, being set up for the plane.
What injuries did you have?
And I saw this after I'd come back out of the hospital and was passing many times. The door had been blown off, and also it had bits of metal and what have you, it had come off, and I had very small shards of metal in the back of my legs, plus tiny stones and that from the desert. That's what they found in the back of my legs. But as I say, CCS, and of course, fixed me up and I was in the ambulance and went down to a base hospital where I don't know. I just do not know. I think it would be in the regions of Alexandria or Sidi Bish, that area. It was a hutted hospital, not a tented one, a hutted. It was a hutted hospital, but I think I should say it was a production factory. The first time I've ever seen medical services in the production line. We were sort of taken into one room where we were given pre-meds and then moved on. The next came in and we were given our anaesthetic, local anaesthetic in my case, and then into this operating theatre where this muck was taken out of my legs. And then into the recovery, and then into the wards, and it was all done up military fashion, certainly was. But my injuries were really superficial. I'd been suffering more from shock than wounds. They were very, very superficial. As I say, when I'm talking about heads of matches size, that sort of thing, you see. And I was never ever sent back to convalescent camp or transit camp again, because I was sent straight back up the line again, where that where the battalion technical officer was said, I'm giving you your second tape and I'm recommending you for your third tape, but only after you've been down to learn all about the new Sherman tank that the battalion is going to get re-equipped with.